Hello, everybody. Welcome to the RSN podcast. July 4th is coming up. It's right around the corner, actually. And it's pretty interesting how we're celebrating the independence, which is Independence Day for us, July 4th. Very big weekend. People go ahead, go to barbecues, have fun, be with family, drink.
Go away on vacation.
Do all kinds of stuff.
Gotta eat burgers.
And hot dogs and all that good stuff. And celebrate the values of America. But also there's another thing that also is which is a central idea of America too that we celebrate, which is diversity. Our country, basically, when we talk about America, it's a land of immigrants, basically. Everyone, whether they want to admit it or not, has been an immigrant or has some lineage to an immigrant. Basically, we have some kind of nationality, we have identity, we have a culture. And basically today what we're talking about is international stars in professional wrestling. Basically talking about international stars that have broken boundaries, broken cultural boundaries, broken religious boundaries, all that stuff. But for the sake of not being too political, we're just going to talk about the wrestling business, just talking about the stars that have been influential, the people that have made a difference in the wrestling business with their talent and bringing all that stuff over, and also the impact of those people coming into the different companies, wherever they were to work, and basically entertain us. So I'll hand it to you guys, and we'll just introduce this right here. So we got, on one side, we got Rich.
We got the big guy here saying what's up.
We got myself, the mastermind. And also we got the owner, operator, of COO, and... well, actually, the COO of EWO, the man himself, Nick.
Welcome, folks. Hope everyone's enjoying themselves as they're days away from barbecued goodness, as I'm sure everyone is around this time of the year. As my colleagues put it before, I am in fact the owner, editor-in-chief of ProWrestlingOpinion.com, offering you the most in-depth, exclusive analysis, segment-by-segment breakdown of various TV shows, pay-per-views. We cover anything, WWE, TNA, ROH, America's Most Liked Wrestling, West Coast Wrestling Connection, Pro Wrestling Syndicate. We got stuff from the 80s, stuff from the 90s, we're working on some stuff for the in-betweens, the 2000 era, but, you know, give us some time. We'll get to that time. But, yeah, Pro Wrestling Opinion, we cover pro wrestling past, present, and future. And with that, I think I will throw it back to you guys, because it's just all about the international flavor.
Well, it is. It's indeed. I mean, on top of that, you got a Facebook page, don't you, too, right, on PWO?
Yes, we do. Feel free to like us. It's Pro Wrestling Opinion. Three simple words, pretty simple search, but a like that will last for the ages.
And like Nick said in previous podcasts, reading is fundamental. Reading wrestling puts you over the top.
Yes, yes. You could have said it much better. That was a perfect way to put it.
It'll be still over. You'll be like Roman Reigns.
Hopefully not as bad as him, though.
And hopefully not as bad as whose name that we shall not speak of.
Please.
Sal, if you say the name, we're kicking you out of this chat.
Please, yeah. People are enjoying their, you know, they're about to, you know, get down with America being free and all that. We don't need that name mentioned.
A certain red-haired freak that we don't want to mention.
You're going too far. Okay. Man. People are gathering mental.
Let's leave it at that. Let's just leave it at that. And
I have a request. Forgive me for saying these names, but in this podcast, can we not mention Eva Marie, Kevin Dunn, or Jim Cornette? Please.
Oh, God. You've done too much damage.
I said forgive me for saying those names, but I do not want to hear those three names mentioned in this show, please.
You might need some Listerine. You already talked about them.
I apologize, but...
our listeners are going to need Listerine, too.
They need Axol or some shit like that, alcohol, to clean out their ears because
and scope and a toothbrush. You got to get to it right away. This way you could come back and listen to us about the international stars.
Indeed.
We'll give you guys about 30 seconds.
Okay, time's up. Time's up.
Yeah, there you go. Let's get back to this.
Hopefully we're all back, right? Okay. So, for this podcast, we're specifically talking about international stars.
I have a question for you guys. For this show, are we talking international as in they were born and raised in the country, or they went to the country from America?
I think it's only fair that we discuss both of those situations, because don't forget, you could come from one place and affect a different company, because in that different company, they are technically an international star.
Perfect example, AJ Styles. He came from America, went to Japan. Is that considered an international star or no?
Yeah, it's technical, because it's somewhere else. He technically is an international star. If you're coming from somewhere else in a different place and you're making a name for yourself, you're an international star. You don't have to be from America to be a star in Japan, just like you don't have to be a star in Japan to be a star in America.
Because people have different meanings to international star. Yeah,
that's true. I mean, well, there's a thing also. That's what we define what an international star is. Basically, a star that's not only performed here in the United States, but performed abroad. So Mexico, Japan, Europe, everywhere. Asia, Africa, everywhere, you name it. They performed at a global level. They've exceeded at that, and they've been known globally for that. But on top of that, you know, we can talk about the times. If you compare now and then, we actually have more now, like more born international stars than we had, like, coming over here, for example. Like, matter of fact, you could say that we have more multinational, multicultural stars. Basically, stars that were born here, but have a lineage to either some culture or another culture. And they have, like, a cross-cultural thing. And, you know, that's something that they bring over, and that's another piece of diversity that they bring into the country. For example, The Rock. His mom was from, you know, mom has a lineage from Samoa. Dad is from, dad is born here, American. And as a result, we got The Rock, half Samoan, half black. And, you know, that's one example. But in addition, we can talk about the different stars that were born and then brought here. But let's start off with going through the times. I mean, if you think about the eras and all the companies that were there, let's talk about, for example, back in the day, AWA, helped go even further back, whether just the territories, Mid-Atlantic and all that other stuff. There wasn't many international stars. There wasn't that much, you know? But one name I think really stands out. If you think about one name, what's his name? Italian star who transcended everything. Famous name.
Bruno Sammartino.
And he's probably one of the first, world-renowned stars that I've ever made that kind of impact. Where they were an international star that came out from outside and they came to America to make a living. And perfect story right there, you know. But Bruno Sammartino is one of those examples that exemplify a international star. But, I mean, when you look back, are there any other stars that have made that kind of impact in those times?
Andre the Giant.
I would actually... The first guy to, like, really make me think about, like, a foreign gimmick, the first guy to, like, really make it, like, mainstream on WWE, at least, I'd probably go with maybe the Sheik, or maybe, if not the Sheik, I would probably go with, what's his
name? Well, actually, Sheik is, like, towards the 80s, isn't he?
He is towards the 80s, but I think, going back to, like, my earliest memory, of, you know, a guy who, like, really took the idea of being, like, international, like, blended his lifestyle with his gimmick. The first guy to, like, really make that known, I think for me, is the Sheik.
Darren Sheik, of course, from Iran.
That's what he brings back, and, you know,
he makes people
lots
humble.
Of other fun expletive activities.
He makes people humble.
Rich, why don't you tell us about Iron Sheik and your experiences and thoughts about him?
Well, my personal opinion, which everyone on this show could agree, hands down, he's the greatest shoot interview person ever. He breaks backs. He makes people humble. Everyone's a jabroni to him. And little known fact, he enjoys watching Steph Curry play basketball.
Which is very interesting because, you know, this guy has a lot of, you know, he's from Iran. If you look at, I don't know if you guys seen the documentary with the Sheik. He has a whole documentary of his whole story and everything.
It's, oh, I think and, he, and he said he should have broke Hulk Hogan's back.
Vern Gagne was telling him to break his back, and he would give him $100,000. He'd say, okay, I'll take care of you. And he said no. And, you know, that's something that's that you can respect because this guy, he was a legitimate heel. He was being treated like crap in WWF, and they gave him a push, and he was loyal. And that's what I think a cultural thing. Like, he was kind of like, you know, in that time, you have to be loyal to, you know, who was who took care of you. He said, this is his words, I don't cut the hand that feed me. And you got to respect that. You got to say, and he was probably one of the best heels ever. There were people that were literally wanted to go, and when he was in the parking lot, they would want to freaking kill him right there on the spot. They would want to shoot him up, kill him right there on the spot. Because he was this anti-American, you know, hero, and, you know, anti-hero and all this stuff. But that's something that I think was also very, very, you know, really, really influential part of him. You know, what else do you guys think is, you know, something that international, you know, international stars should bring? Because when if you think about it, what's with the Sheik? What happened was he was probably the first ever anti-American character. Would you guys agree?
I think a great international star, the British Bulldog.
That was like anti-American.
He first came onto the scene as like a white meat baby face, and then he was teaming up with Kid Dynamite as part of the British Bulldogs, which is where he derived his gimmick from when the team broke up. But yeah, I think that's.
But then he went to the Hart Foundation, who was anti-America.
I think that was the evolution, isn't it, of international stars where. If you're a heel, you're automatically seen as an anti-American. And, yeah. Like, the most faces, they're either big because of the talent, what they bring.
Or they're pro-America.
Yeah, they're pro-America, or they just talk about America.
And people just, can't USA.
Yep. But I think that's the thing. That's if you especially look at that time, that was, like, the very, like, that was a golden era, basically. People were coming in left and right. Immigrants, it was a new nation, everybody, you know, we grew through that time, and there's like a whole bunch of stories we will talk about, you know, interactions with different people.
Because if you remember back in the golden era, when it was Sheik as the top heel, it was Sheik versus Hogan, which was America versus Iran, and then Sergeant Slaughter turned on America.
That was the first glimpse of seeing American turn heel and anti-American.
Which was probably the biggest heel turn ever.
Well, here's another thing, too. With Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Mr. You know, USA.
Mr. America.
Yeah, and there's a story of him and Sheik going on the New Jersey Turnpike. And what do you see in the papers? Two bozos caught on the highway doing dope while driving, all this stuff. You know, that kind of brought a blow, didn't it, to the business? I mean, you know, people kind of yelled at them, said, oh, you know, you guys broke the whole business, you guys took it down, now kayfabe is dead. You know, what would you guys say to that?
That was just, wow, when I first heard that.
Well, most people, they would say that it was like, oh, this guy's, you know, a foreigner. He's, you know, from outside. And he did this, and now he just, you know, corrupted one of our own. Well, that was, I think, the mentality behind that.
I'm just speechless at that because when that happened, it was the whole Sheik anti-American thing. He's caught with the American guy.
He was a heel, and Hacksaw was a face, I think, right?
Yeah. I don't think Hacksaw was ever a heel.
Yeah, that's another thing, that American never is the heel. I mean, even if you look currently now, any person that's preaching America, have they ever been a heel while being, you know, like pro-American?
Not that I can recall.
What about the faction of the real Americans? With Cesaro and Jack Swagger.
I would if we're kind of referencing our factions episode, but I wouldn't consider them a faction per se. They were more like a tag team with the Valet. Yeah. But you know, I did like the idea, at least on paper, of it was just kind of ironic because Jack Swagger's heel character is basically like what Kurt Angle's original Olympic hero gimmick was in the Attitude Era, of just like this over-the-top American just bragging about his accomplishments, making you hate him even though he's like a patriotic figure.
Just that's remember, kinda, yeah, he won a gold medal with a broken freaking neck.
Broken,
you have to respect
neck.
Him.
You have
all
to.
For America. All for America, should we say.
And then, yeah, so basically like Jack Swagger's, you know, heel, you know, they kind of went on like the Republican kind of point of view where like, you know, they wanted all the immigrants out, this and that. So Zeb Coulter was just kind of like his mouthpiece to like rile the people up, and then like he would do his thing in the ring. But I guess it's just a little bit,
what I find funny about that.
I would point to them as like a first example of like great heel.
What I find funny though about that stable, they're pro-America. You have someone who's from Switzerland in your stable.
I think that just adds to the irony of it. I think that's what made it work, because they hate America.
But I always find that funny, though.
For America.
I always find that funny, though. You have someone who's from Switzerland in a pro-American group.
And that was kind of revolutionary, because most groups, you wouldn't see that. You would either see the reverse in Sergeant Slaughter's case, where he turned and he was the American going on the pro-Iran side. You know, that was kind of interesting, too. But how about, let's talk about the different talents. How about during the Monday Night Wars? We always have this, if we reference one of our old episodes, we talked about the rise and fall, where there was, you know, this influx of talent that came in from Mexico and Japan specifically, and their impact on that. You know, what names do you think kind of bring about that, you know, that whole change?
Yeah. I think that was actually maybe the first instance where international stars got to perform on it. I mean, you can't not mention names like Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit. Guess
ooh,
that
you
is
said
name,
a curse.
That, you know, sue me. I don't know where Dean Malenko is. I don't know if he's Canadian, but you know, they all kind of came in within that same era. I mean, yeah, their characters didn't really go anywhere per se, but they got the chance to do what they do best. You know, put on really good wrestling matches and just get, you know, fans on that side of the spectrum, like entertained. You know, while the main event storylines, you know, kept you hooked into the show. I think that was the first instance where international stars like got their chance to like really break out. I'll even mention names like Rey Mysterio, Psicosis, La Parca. I think there were also the Villa Nuevas. I forget the name of their. There was like four of them, five of them, but you know, I think. There's probably a few other names I'm forgetting, too.
Who was in the group that you were talking about? I don't remember them.
Which one?
The one you can't remember the name of?
Mexico?
No, it was like Los Villa Nuevas or something, like or Villa Nova. It's completely slipping my mind, and watch out that we finish this. I'm going to end up remembering, like, 2 minutes after. I'm going to totally be kicking myself.
Do you remember who was in
like,
it, though?
No, it was just like a generic mass luchador, but there were like three of them, three or four of them, like four different incarnations of them. And they were like, it was like 1997, they would wrestle on Nitro. Like he was part of like the international, you know, kind of team, not team, but like he would take part in those matches where it would just be like random cruiserweight against random cruiserweight just for the sake of like a spot fest. Yeah, the name is totally slipping my mind, but I have to mention them as part of this conversation. I mean, at least if you know of them, I know it definitely, there's like a V in there somewhere. I don't know if it's like Villanova or Villanueva, but they used to be like three or four of them back in the day. And it's really, I'm really pissed that I can't remember it right off the top of my head, but it was entertaining, that's for sure. The Rey Mysterio Psicosis matches, when they happened in ECW, I think that was...
The Mexican really, Death Match?
Yeah, they wowed everyone, and then when they got the chance to do it in WCW, it was even better, even though their matches were kind of like toned down versions of those, but you can't deny that Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero had like some awesome matches back in the day.
I mean, that's all the Mexican talent mostly. There's also the Japanese talent too. If you look at some names such as the Great Muda, you look at who else?
Tajiri.
Tajiri. There's there's also I think there's so many names you can list. There's a Tiger Mask. I think his name was.
Yeah. Ultimo Dragon.
Tiger Mask. Ultimo Dragon. But you know this, like for example, like specifically Great Muda.
We're forgetting one legend. A man, no one brought him up. I was waiting to see.
For Japan?
Yeah. Yushin Thunder Liger.
Oh yes, yes.
Yeah, definitely. He's even still around nowadays, which is amazing because you could still pretty much go at his age.
He just performed last year at Brooklyn.
Yeah. And he's still going. And also look at, for example, Great Muda also. Like, Great Muda, Jushin Thunder Liger, these guys, this is their life. They're semi-retired, but they keep going. Like, they keep on going.
He appeared on both NXT and ROH within months of each other.
And it's interesting that they're performing at this level. They're really, really old, and they're still performing at this, you know, this specific level. But also another thing, the times, you know. They're basically in the time where it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of hostile, where there's like a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, like going from place to place, you're not really welcome a lot. Like if you were to wrestle in Japan or Mexico, you know, it's pretty much known, okay, you're a performer. But if you were like, let's say, Puerto Rico, or, you know, if you were to go to, you know, even in the United States, you'd be kind of looked down. You'd probably say, oh, you know, that's just another cruiserweight, or, oh, that's just another guy that likes doing gymnastic stuff. But, you know, that's kind of interesting that these guys revolutionized it, and now there's more new talent that are coming in, specifically in the independents, that are performing this style. Another big match. This recently happened. It was a big, very big match on social media. Everywhere was talking about it recently. It was Ricochet versus, I can't remember his name. I forgot his name.
Will Ospreay?
Yes, yes, Will Ospreay. They said that was probably one. I don't know if you guys seen the match. That match was, like, it was crazy. They had so many spots, two, like, fantastic athletes, and they're prime. They were doing all these spots and everything, and people were kind of criticizing them, like, specifically legends. I remember Vader going up and saying something about how that's not real wrestling, and then some people were like, oh, that is real wrestling. That is wrestling. And that's kind of interesting how there's this style, and people kind of say, oh, that's not how it is. Because if you think back in the day, where it was like the technical style, they saw that as wrestling. But now it's totally different from that. Now everything has just evolved, where simple springboard is kind of, you know, back then would have been, oh my God, that's not wrestling. But now it's like, okay, that's part of the act, you know? So, I mean, what would you guys say to that? Do you guys feel like they should continue to stay in that style, or should they perform these spots?
I personally say let the cruiserweights and the light heavyweights, whatever you want to call them now, let them do what they're used to. Let them do high performance moves. Let them do the high flying moves off the top rope, off a ladder. If you go TNA, let them do it off the Ultimate X match platform thing that they got, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
DX.
Yeah, whatever you want to call that shit. Let them do what they used to. That's how they were taught in whatever dungeon or dojo wrestling school they went to. That's what they were signed to do. If you're 190 pounds, you're going to be a high flyer. If you're 190 pounds and you want to run with the big guys, all props to you, you're probably going to get destroyed by someone who's 270 pounds.
I think I kind of like the idea that they're bringing back the whole cruiserweight tournament, just because I'm a fan of like the big, you know, aerial maneuver kind of wrestling match. It's a different way of looking at a match, and it also keeps the crowd engaged. You know, we've seen things that just shouldn't happen between human beings in a wrestling ring, but they make it possible because you just have that kind of chemistry. You could work many matches, many different types of styles. But I think crowd entertainment is like the biggest factor, and if you can keep them engaged for like 20 plus minutes in like an epic battle, more power to you. I think where WCW and like where WWE goes wrong sometimes is that they push these guys as like high flyers, but they don't really know what to do with them. You know, past a certain point, they'll get up to a high position on the card, but they won't really maintain that position, or they don't know how to push them even further, as that's where WCW went wrong. And you've seen a lot of the backbone of, you know, WCW were the cruiserweights, and when they deflected to WWE, they made their product better, and WCW suffered because of it. I think it's just a way of, like Rich said, you know, letting the guys do what they do. You know, that's the way you should book people, you know, book them to their strengths and their advantages, just like how they got over in the indies, have them do the same thing in WWE, you know. It's working with Owens, you know, he's kind of like the loudmouth heel that he was very notorious for back in ROH, and it's working for him. And then you got, you know, they were doing stuff with Neville per se, but I mean, at his core, he was just the guy who could fly. And they didn't really have a story with him, I guess, outside of NXT. But I guess he got injured, unfortunately, so we didn't really get to see anything develop from that. But the fact that, you know, he could, you know, you can be a high flyer in this sport and still get a lot of success. It's just trying to maintain that success into a you know.
I have a question for you guys. Since we're on the, like, the high flyer, would you consider Sami Zayn a high flyer?
Yes.
Or no?
Yes, yeah. If he flies out of the ring, he's a high flyer. And then not even that, he, back from his El Generico days, he was pretty much a luchador. I mean, you can't deny it. And a lot of his offense is still aerial based, you know?
What about Seth?
Yes, I would consider him too, because he flies off the top rope. He does all these things. He toned it down a little bit more to that WWE kind of style, which he does very well. But
I think now that he's back from his knee surgery, I think he's going to take it easy now.
Well, that's what the...
But we could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that's with any performer, really, now. I mean, especially now with the concern of these people doing high spots, there's more risk of injury. Because if you look at the past year and a half, there's been injury after injury after injury, and there's been a whole roll call of injuries. People have been out, it's limited the roster's capacity to the point where they said, okay, let's tone down the spots. But now it's, you know, we're fans. We don't want to see the same old technical wrestling. We want to see something extravagant, something cool.
Where the internet marks, we want to see what we want to see.
We want to see what we want to see. And also, we don't want to keep seeing the same thing over and over. I mean, like, for example, two great stars, two great international stars who are masters in the ring. Fit Finlay, William Regal. And British, you know, Roundhouse. He can go ahead and perform 1-2-3. He's a freaking fly on the mat. He can do whatever. Like, you tell him to do it, he's going to be able to master that.
To be honest, back in the day, I didn't mind seeing that match every single week because you knew it was going to be a 5-star match between those two.
With Fit Finlay and William Regal?
Exactly. Back in WCW days, I loved seeing that those two guys put on a match every single week.
Well, I think as individuals, they were pretty good. But, like, I think most fans, they don't really want... Like, for example, me, my initial impression was, like, okay, this is boring. I'd rather, you know, watch something else. I'd rather see the high flyers, you know. But that's probably age preference and everything, because once you see something, you want to see something cool. But as you get more patience, you start saying, oh, okay, this is cool. But, like, for example, those two stars... You know, why haven't they ever become world champion? Is it because they're only stuck to that style? You know? And, like, for example, let's say Yeah, I mean, look at Rey Mysterio. He's transcended. He's done all kinds of stuff. He's gone to the other style, but he still brings back the luchador style, and he became world champion. So why hasn't, you know, why haven't these two become a world champion? Is it because they're too stuck on the technical wrestling? Are they too stuck with what they know and what they learn? And that's what's limited?
My personal opinion, I think it was booking.
Booking?
Yeah. I think it was the WCW booking that held them back from getting the title. My personal opinion.
That's true. I mean, to a point. I mean, I think to a degree. I mean, but still, like, they went to WWE, and still, they didn't get that much. I mean, if you look at William Regal, he has stints back and forth, sporadic appearances, from, like, 2000 to 2010.
Regal did have a kind of like a say in the storylines because he was technically booked as the commissioner.
Yeah.
And then he helped get guys over, things among that sort.
And I remember Jericho peed in his tea as a commissioner.
Yeah, I think that's probably his most significant moment, I guess you want to say. Getting peed, you know, in a cup by another guy. He did put on good matches though. That's for sure. I can't remember like one per se. I'd say maybe against Jericho at WrestleMania 17.
But then you could go kind of new also. His matches against Cesaro in NXT.
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean with the like for Cesaro for example, the Swiss Superman. Like, you know, like you see his style and you go, that's a future world champion. And you're kind of looking and banging your head saying, why isn't they making this guy world champion? Is it because of his style? Is it because he's too stubborn? I mean, specifically like the European wrestlers, they kind of have this limitation being set right now. Look at Neville. Look at, for example, who else? Look at Wade Barrett, for example. Why were they limited, you know?
Because they didn't have the it factor.
What'd you say to that, Nick? You were saying something? My fault.
I mean, as far as, like, Barrett, I kind of liked how he... it's weird, because even though I know he's, like, a British guy, they didn't really embellish that when they first started pushing him, because he was just kind of like that guy. He was the standout guy on NXT Season 1, that's undoubtedly... But I think he was, it's because he was paired with Jericho, who was like the suit veteran heel at the time, and then he kind of came out with like his own blazer with the rose. He had his own look. He had a pretty good moveset, so he got to stand out on his own, and then he could cut some really good promos too, and then he emerged as the Nexus leader. But it never really was established like, oh hey, this guy is from British, not from British, from Britain. And it's like, oh, he can kick some ass, too. It was around one of, like, his later gimmicks where they started pushing, like, the fact that he's, like, this British badass, like the Barrett Barrage and all that. But then things took a downturn, like, once they started focusing on, like, the bad news Barrett. And we kind of lost the idea of, like, oh, hey, this guy's from Britain, so he's a total badass, besides from the show that, you know, they did in London. So they didn't really embellish the gimmick the way that I think they could have to get him over even more. But I don't think he wanted to be pushed that way. Because you already had guys like Rusev, you know, being billed as where they're from, getting over that way. But I think it would have actually helped Barrett a little bit more had he been pushed as like, you know, the face of Britain. He never really got a face run either. That would have been cool to see what would happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting how, you know, they give them all these gimmicks, and they're so centered around a certain stereotype or a certain cultural thing, you know, like, oh, you know, you're the British guy, this is what you do. I think that's what's kind of limiting most of the talents. And you also look at the fact that Wade Barrett, he had a lot of potential. His style in the ring, he was able to perform at a good pace. But then they gave him these shitty gimmicks, and then people kind of lost touch because they put out so many gimmicks, but then at the same time, we're kind of like, how can we associate him with one. And I think that's the challenge that they have. They can put as many masks as they want on a person, but if you can't associate one person or one face, then you really have lost, you know, the person has really lost interest in that person, in that star. And I think that was the case for Wade Barrett. But here's another thing. With cultural stereotypes, for example, with, let's look, with, for example, Giant Gonzalez, big guy, Hispanic, you know, they didn't bring his, you know, his culture or anything like that into play, but he was this big guy from outside, and, you know, they didn't bring none of that. They just said, okay, you know, he's a big guy, stay out from out of nowhere, and he does this, and he's, you know, he's an intimidating force. Let's talk about another guy. For example, Great Khali. Big guy.
Oh, my God. Foot. He was horrible.
He was a train wreck. And I'm speaking as, you know, as an Indian. Like, when you see that and you're kind of like, damn, that, you know, that's kind
of messed up. He only got his push because of his look. That was it. The guy couldn't wrestle. Oh, Lord, he couldn't.
He could barely move.
He couldn't move. He had no power or nothing. He couldn't do anything. And the thing is, they put the world title on him. And they just gave it to him because they thought they saw potential in him.
But no, they didn't see potential in him. Vince saw dollar signs.
But as a heel, what about a heel? I mean, he was pretty good as a heel. I mean, when you saw him debut and beat The Undertaker, you kind of were like, who the hell is this guy? Is this Giant Gonzalez's cousin coming out of nowhere? Like, who is this guy? And then as you see this, he starts becoming his heel, this anti-American or this foreigner that just, you know, does stuff. And then they just put up a whole bunch of, like, stereotypical stuff, and it was just kind of like, okay, you guys need to, like, there's no point in this. Because there was a segment where they would have the Punjabi prison match, they would have segments
which
where...
Which was a horrible match.
Where, yeah, there would be segments where he gave, like, a peace offering, or he would be, oh, you know, tort, I'm the guy. Like, you know, how can you get behind that? You know, like, I understand stereotypes, you want to make some, you know... comedic stuff or anything. Some people can relate to, but it's kind of like, you know what, you're really limiting the guy because you're kind of putting him in this fixed realm, and then that's it, and then they just fall off. I mean, there's so many talents you could talk about that have done the same, you know. But so we talk about Mexico, we talk about Japan. What about Canada?
We even do India in there.
I mean, well, from what I know, one star that I think is pretty good that has made a difference. I don't know if you heard of him. Tiger Ajit Singh.
I heard of him before.
He's like the great Muda of India, supposedly. Like, he has the style or something, but that's from what I'm hearing. But does
he have strong style?
Well, yeah. Well, strong style is more of a... Well, right now it's becoming more of a European style, isn't it? Because you see people like Zack Sabre Jr.
I think he's going to be a monster.
He is a phenomenal.
If he comes to NXT, he's going to be a monster.
I think WWE is pushing for him. They want him to be the next John Cena, and I hope they do make him the next.
I think what they're doing with the whole Cruiserweight tournament, I think it's the winner gets a contract, I think they said, if I heard correctly.
Well, it seems that way, yeah. They're definitely trying to push him to be... They're trying to push someone to get a spot on NXT or on the main roster or something like that, but... It looks that way. And here's another thing. WWE has this Cruiserweight Classic, right? Other promotions have had like some kind of global tournament or some kind of global cup. TNA had the X Cup, I think the World X Cup, something like that. Yeah, and ROH had, I think, a couple of international competitions.
They always have it every year, though. ROH always has it every year.
I do have to applaud TNA for the move, though, because the World X Cup, I think, was probably the best implementation of international stars, because at the time they had to deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That's true, yeah.
Or was it Dragon Gate? It was like one of the other two. And then they drew Mike Tenay on commentary. You know, he's always knowledgeable about the international talents. He got to be Sir Mike like he was in WCW.
Professor Tenay.
And then you had like Motor City Machine Guns going against Speed Muscle. I used to see Speed Muscle in the independent circuit back in Ring of Honor, so it was really awesome to like see them on TV fighting.
Why does that name sound familiar?
Because they had the blonde guy and the short guy, but one was really fast and the other one was really strong, so that's why they called
Speed
Muscle. Masato Yoshino, and I'm forgetting the other one, but they were really, like...
Because that name sounds so familiar when you said that. I just couldn't match the names to the group.
I'm forgetting one name, but one was definitely Masato Yoshino. He was like a beast, like speed-wise in the ring. Like he would run the ropes in a millisecond.
Okay.
It was pretty awesome. And then even then, he had other guys too. Like I'm trying to think of like Doug Williams first got his name. Like
Petey Williams.
Well, in ROH he really first made his name, but then he kind of like came back on the circuit, you know, with that tournament.
Then you had Petey Williams.
Petey Williams kind of got to do it. There's another name, too, that's slipping my mind, but he was also a presence in the tournament. It was from the British side. Or was it Canada? I'm not too sure, but...
Then you have the guys now, Spud, who isn't impressive.
He is good, though, but I feel like they're...
He is good, but he's not, like, impressive.
They go, like, one step forward, two steps back with him, because he can cut a really good promo.
Oh, then you got Magnus and Bram.
Magnus and Bram are pretty... Well, Magnus, you see him, he's a force.
He's the GFW champion now.
Yeah, and I think he has potential of becoming, like, an NXT superstar, for sure. I think NXT is keeping their eye on him, for sure. But, I mean, this, like, TNA, they were probably the first to actually bring up this whole global, you know, involvement, like, with the Cups and everything. Also, ROH, they have so many different partnerships with, like, AAA, New Japan, with bringing talent, and they have, like, a Global Wars pay-per-view, let's say, or something else like that. And
I'm just throwing this out there, guys. Whoever comes with a deal with Lucha is going to make so much money. Whoever has a partnership with Lucha Underground.
Well, Lucha is like a subsidiary of AAA, I think, right? So,
they work with the company. They're kind of like they're close together, so they kind of they exchange talent.
That's
also good. You get to see international stars on American like kind of platform, and you get to see their story like played out where you normally wouldn't get to because you have to, you know, unless you know Spanish and you could, you know, translate the commentary, you won't really get their motivation or what they're all about. At least with Lucha Underground, you can understand what the motivation is for guys like Phoenix. You know, you got guys like Pentagon Jr.,
Prince Puma.
There's a whole bunch of different names that are just over because they're there. You got Drago, Aerostar, Daga, who came over from AAA. You had Taya Valkyrie, who's also well-known in AAA.
Prince
Puma.
Just
a lot of different AAA talent that, you know, is getting to, like, do their thing on an American platform. And it's just another place to showcase their skills, and they could do things, you know, and have the storylines be in English, you know, and you could still have them push the same way you normally would on Spanish television. So it's pretty cool. That's one of the things I like about Lucha Underground. It's a television show about a wrestling show, but it's not about wrestling. It's kind of more thematic, it's more dramatic, and above all else, you get really good matches because it's really easy to tell stories
with
the Lucha style, you know, television.
And you have the amazing Joey Ryan there.
The controversial Joey Ryan, Jesse.
With his penis flip, or whatever the hell you want to call the move.
His indestructible penis. If his penis was a character, like basically any kind of wrestler, it would be John Cena. Because basically, you know, Superman, he doesn't fall, he keeps going up.
And always kicks out at two.
Always kicks out at two, indeed. Yes. Perfect match. But, I mean, we talked about this in the previous podcast. What's holding WWE back is not being able to do these kind of deals with different promotions. Well, they're doing right now with Evolve and all this, but in the future they need to do something where they can bring in these, you know, international stars and put themselves out there. Because if you really think about
it, what they're lacking is international talent.
With WWE?
Yeah, that's a proven fact. They are lacking international talent and international viewing.
Well, I think they're struggling right now, because if you see the Performance Center, there's like people from over 50 countries over there trying to become WWE superstars. So I think they made a step, but they got to do it quicker. I mean, if you think one of the biggest names right now, I forgot his name, La Sombra.
He should be coming up to NXT. Like, he's coming, he's like the guy.
Supposedly they book him as the guy. Like, he's one of the biggest names, one of the biggest signees. I think Triple H was trying to get him and everything, like, into this big thing. But, like, especially with these kind of new stars, it's kind of interesting to see what, you know, how this is going to play now. I mean, WWE PC, they have so many Performance Center. They got so many talents from different countries, a variety of countries, and they're trying to bring them in and do something. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think WWE needs to be more diverse.
But here's the question, though. Is it too late for them? Is it too late for WWE to like try and get the overseas viewers? Is it too late?
I don't think, because they book themselves as this, they basically promote themselves as this global phenomenon. So if they are a global phenomenon, they have to get the people everywhere. Because, like, honestly, when you see them go overseas, what do you see in the crowd mostly? People are holding out their flag. There's always one patch of crowd, like one part of the crowd that has a flag of the nation, and they're doing, you know, they're holding it up and doing all that. And then when they see the person from their country, they go bonkers. They just go ape shit crazy, like, oh my god, that's our guy, that's our guy. And I think that's what WWE lacks. They need more people like that, specifically in the Spanish Latino. Superstar. They don't have any. They really don't have any. It's Kalisto, and pretty much they don't have much. And they're trying to make this thing with Primo and Epico with the rebrand of, you know, making them.
Vince already cut that off.
He cut that off?
They had two matches and they're only doing vignettes now. They're not fighting.
Well, that's bullshit. Because see, that's another thing. WWE always limits. They put out these talents and then they limit them. And then there's
You have to, like, the way Vince sees it, if you get no crowd reaction, you're finished.
Yeah, it's like 1, 2, 3, you have to get a reaction.
Because if you remember,
it's not like their gimmick had much life to begin with, because it's like, welcome to our ring, it's Puerto Rico.
This is paradise.
I didn't really understand it. They're guys who like love Puerto Rico. Like, I don't know like how far that gets you.
See, if they had Carlito,
their moveset wasn't really all that.
If they had Carlito with them, they might have had a chance to stay up.
I mean, with let's talk about, for example, Carlito. Yeah, Carlito comes in, he speaks Spanish, and like,
but he cool.
Has a certain style to him. But yeah, he has a certain style to him, and that Carlito, you know that.
Carlito was cool.
And he was cool, yeah. He has obnoxious style with him. He could be this, this guy that can be rude. He could be bad heel. And
ironically, I thought Primo was Carlito at first. It took me a while to realize, oh wow, they're actually two different people. I thought maybe it was Carlito. I thought he came back and like cut his hair or something.
Wow, that's racist.
There is if you actually think about it, like if you put them side by side,
they do look very, very, very similar.
They look very similar. They do,
like, but really close.
Yeah, I mean, it's also interesting how, and that's another thing. I think the problem with this is they bring in the international talent. They're scared to do something because they feel like they're gonna be labeled racist. When that's always the case. If you look recently, I think 2 years ago with Bill DeMont, he got fired because he was supposedly training people and he was being racist about it. So that tells you something about how, you know, that's probably some view that's going on, something like that. And I think what WWE needs to do is just distance themselves from, like, you know, basically having that old mentality of, okay, let's go with stereotypes. Let's go with something that people know.
If you're talented, let's keep you talented.
Yeah.
Not try and write you as the stereotypical Mexican high-fly wrestler or the stereotypical British brawler, just say.
What about, for example, this is one of the most infamous gimmicks. Recently they posted up Kofi Kingston, the Jamaican. That was just, when you look at that, it's just...
Well, what's funny is he's not even Jamaican.
He's not even Jamaican, that's the thing.
That's the funny part.
But I think it's kind of funny that they just recently had them reference that, because no one ever mentioned that,
he's from Ghana, actually. He's from Ghana, West Africa. They billed him Ghana, West Africa, and he was Jamaican. So that kind of tells you the booking. Like, I think there's a problem with the booking, for sure.
It's racist. Okay. The writers for WWE are racist.
They're racist, indeed. I think they are. But we don't blame them for just being racist. I don't think, maybe they're not that bad people. It's just, I think that they don't do a lot of writing. Yeah, they're writing. They're not doing the research. They're just looking at it and saying, oh, this is basically what we're going to say. But they should look more into it, you know? And that's the problem that they're having. Look at Alberto Del Rio and the social media coordinator, what that whole thing turned into. It was a small little thing, and then it escalated into something else.
Here, like, perfect example. Just say WWE does sign Ricochet, Will Ospreay, Prince Puma, all of them. Like, all the big names. Are they going to put them as...
Ricochet is Prince Puma.
Yeah. Yep. Sorry about that. Sorry, I love you, Prince Puma. You're still the shit.
Say his name twice.
Prince Puma, Prince Puma, Prince Puma. But just say WWE does sign all those big names from Mexico, Japan, and all that.
I'd get kick if they sign both Ricochet and Prince Puma. That would be two different personas.
Are they actually going to keep them with their character and gimmicks now? Or are they going to change to something stereotypical?
I think what they're doing right now, if you've seen like the trend in NXT, they try to maintain everything that they're known for on the independent scene, and they just look to accentuate that on NXT, just kind of keep their character the same, but kind of enhance it a little bit. If you notice, that Austin Aries is the exact same Austin Aries that he's always been, Samoa Joe, it's always the same Samoa Joe he's always been. Finn Balor is pretty much like the whole Prince Devitt thing, except he's got like a dark side to him now.
The demon.
You know,
which
Kevin
I want.
Owens is pretty much Kevin Owens. Sami Zayn is kind of like similar to El Generico, except he's got a bigger underdog story,
and
he's
hat.
Not just a luchador under a mask. He now actually gets to like be someone.
And so he has a hat and a jacket.
Yeah, that too. He looks like Andy Capp from the Hot Fries bag. But besides that, you know, I think that's just the direction they're going. I think it's the better direction anyway, because you want to take what guys have already built upon themselves on the independent scene.
I think the only one who actually kept the gimmick name and everything is Nakamura.
Pretty much. Cause
I think he kept everything.
He already had the name recognition, so all you pretty much had to do was just, you know.
Well, you were more of a overseas fan, Nick. His finisher, is it the same exact name as it was in Japan or no?
What is it?
Nakamura's finisher in Japan. Was it the same name?
No,
as it is in NXT?
They actually changed it in WWE to Kinshasa, because the Japanese version of his previous finisher name was, I think a little bit crude than what they were going for. I don't think you could get away with it mentioning it on like Raw or something like that. So I think that's why they changed it to Kinshasa.
What was the name of it though?
I'm forgetting the name of it, but I think it had the name like Death or some sort of.
So something that's not PG.
Well, it was like anti-Middle East or something like that. I don't know. I got it from Wikipedia. It's not always the most reliable information, but it makes sense. I would have to go back and do my research, but yeah, they had changed the name of it because...
So it's something that's not PG, basically.
Not that it wasn't PG, but it was like more offensive to a certain crowd.
Okay.
And they didn't want to upset that part of the fan base for WWE, since they're a global company and, you know, they have the network and all that.
And they could lose a big...
Why, what happened?
They can do that too.
And they could lose a big company right there. They could lose a big section of their viewers.
Yeah, so they just keep it Kinshasa. You know, that's it, they could keep the finisher.
It sounds cool too.
Yeah, it has a kick to it too. That's why I like it.
And it's even better when the announcers say the name of the finisher. They put so much emphasis into it.
Yeah, Corey Graves is like awesome at doing that. He's like Kinshasa, you know.
Just imagine Mauro announcing that.
Oh my God, I could. Mauro Ranallo just needs to narrate life.
With the brand split, what do you guys think they're gonna do with the announcers? Because obviously now they can't have Michael Cole on both shows. Now they gotta do something. They gotta have some.
Well, all the announcers.
Michael Cole isn't on both shows because they have Mauro Ranallo. I think they'll keep this. Because if you notice, the announce teams are completely different for both shows. So they could still get away with doing what they're doing right now.
Yeah, it's Booker
teams. Just have
them
focus on a different roster per se. I love Mauro Ranallo on SmackDown.
Oh, I think he's
Jerry
amazing.
Jerry Lawler and Byron. Well, the only guy who does both shows is Byron Saxon, who's, I don't know, he's getting better in terms of like doing his job, but like I can't take him seriously.
He's still
every
bad.
Wow, that's incredible! Oh my God!
Thank you, Byron. You know.
It's like, yeah, we kind of already knew that. And then he keeps looking at the camera and keeps smiling at us. I can't take it.
Thank you, Byron. We know that move is amazing, and you don't have to smile at us every 2 seconds.
What a great match! Every match ever.
If anything, they should take him out, put in Renee Young or Kathy Kelly.
I'd kind of be intrigued by seeing Renee Young on the announce team.
Yeah.
You never really have a female commentator.
Yeah, that comes into
the only time you really have a female commentator is when it's like Charlotte, Natalya, Sasha.
Just I would actually love to see a female commentator.
That would be great though.
Yeah, that also brings into the diversity question, which is, you know, they need some more diversity, and that also puts into it too. They need more female, female input. Of course, they have them as like, you know, the backstage announcers in the back or doing anything. But as like a main role, they definitely should. And it seems like they're kind of grooming like people like Renee Young to be
They're grooming JoJo to do more than just announce, though.
Well, I think it's just because of the look, because you know she has a look and everything, and also the fact that Eden left, so now they're kind of like, okay, we gotta fill that void. I mean, if you look at Eden, even a black, African American, announcer, that's kind of a role right there. You know, that's kind of like a step in the, you know, a foot in the door, saying, okay, fine, you know, this is our mark, and that's kind of interesting now, because now you see more African Americans being portrayed now on TV. New Day, for example, big influence, and people kind of don't give them credit for that. That they are this big force. They are this, there's this big faction that is comedic, yet very, very serious, yet very, very influential.
Very, very entertaining.
Yeah, and also that people don't give them the credit that they're also African-American. They're three black guys. And another thing is that they were brought in to be that kind of guy, those kind of guys. But now, you know, they kind of diverted into something bigger. So that's something good to see. But it seems like WWE, they're kind of struggling with it, but they're starting to make some strides to try to bring in international stars. And keyword, bring in diversity. But nonetheless, that's our podcast for international stars.
Before we go, I have one question. If you were the talent, like the person that goes overseas and could bring one talent over, who would you bring? Any country, any superstar.
I'd love to see what's his name? Ricochet in WWE. Obviously, you know, they've been trying to get him onto NXT, so it tells you that WWE is paying attention to what they're doing, but I would love to see that happen.
Sal?
I agree, same thing. Ricochet, they need to. It's not when. I mean, it's not if, but when. When will it happen? And it needs to happen soon.
My pick? Zack Sabre Jr.
Zack Sabre, yeah, it's another one. I mean, Zack Sabre Jr., the way that he performs, they need to. Because they're kind of lacking in European talent. They have the British, you know, they have...
Well, he's in the Cruiserweight Classic tournament, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Is Ricochet?
Ricochet, no.
I didn't. No, because he's still under contract to Lucha Underground.
He can't perform.
Yeah, Lucha's got him under lock.
Well, who do you think's going to win that tournament?
I don't know.
Well, it's kind of hard. Yeah, it's kind of hard to say. Well, you know, at this point, it's going to air soon. We'll have to find out from there, you know, who's going to win. But it seems like Zack Sabre Jr. is the heavy hitter. He's the guy. I think that, he's the major pick right now. But, yeah, I mean, we got the Cruiserweight Classic, which is global, which was originally the Global Cruiserweight Tournament, but now they changed it. But it's another, again, it's another big stride WWE's trying to be more diverse, and it's very interesting how they're doing this. But nonetheless, this is our podcast, International Stars. By the way, happy 4th of July from us, RSN Wrestling Podcast.
And when you guys have a chance, go check out Nick's site, ProWrestlingOpinion.com.
And also, in addition,
I have to plug you, Nick.
Oh, we always, thank you. How considerate. It'll make that grilled burger go down a lot better. But if you've never seen us before, check it out, ProWrestlingOpinion.com. We often do reviews of pretty much every single show on the national TV circuit, with the exception of a few. But check us out. I think you'll like what you read. Like I said, reading is fundamental. Reading about pro wrestling doesn't get better than that. And if you've never listened to us before, feel free to check out our past episodes. We get a lot of hits on Rise and Fall WCW, Rise and Fall ECW, and Women of Wrestling. So be sure to check those out, and I'll throw it back to our other guys.
Yep. Basically, that's all we got to say right now. Also, enjoy July 4th. Remember, being American is also about being diverse, celebrating the pride that we get, the independence that we get, the freedom that we have, and also paying homage to that. So, nonetheless, we're going to see you guys out. This is a Mastermind Style.
This is the Big Guy Rich.
And the COO, Nick.
All right, guys. See you.
And have a 4th of July.